Page 160. Now, in the early period of my time among the Venden, the North women would not approach me on account of my darkness of skin and hair, but there was much whispering and glancing in my direction, and giggles one to another. I saw that these unveiled women would nonetheless make a veil with their hands from time to time, and especially when they were laughing. Then I had asked of Herger, "Why do they do this thing? For I wished not to behave in a manner contrary to the North custom." Herger made this reply, "The women believe that the Arabs are as stallions, for so they have heard as a rumor." Nor was this any amazement to me, for this reason, in all the lands I have traveled, and so also within the round walls of the City of Peace, verily in every location where men gather and make for themselves a society, I have learned these things to be truths. First, that the peoples of a particular land believe their customs to be fitting and proper and better than any other. Second, that any stranger, a man or also a woman, is accounted inferior in all ways save in the matter of generation. Page 161. Thus the Turks believe the Persians gifted lovers, the Persians stand in awe of the black-skinned peoples, and they in turn of some others severally, and so it continues, sometimes by reason given of proportion of genitalia, sometimes by reason given of endurance in the act, sometimes by reason given of a special skill or posturing. I cannot say whether the North women truly believe as Herger spoke, but verily I discovered that they were much amazed at me by virtue of my surgery, footnote 3, which practice is unknown among them, as they are dirty heathens. Of the manner of thrusting, these women are noisy and energetic, and of such odor that I was obliged to stop my breath for the duration. Also they are given to bucking and twisting, scratching and biting, so that a man may be thrown from his mount, as the Northmen speak of it. For myself, I accounted the whole business more pain than pleasure. The Northmen say of the act, "I did battle with such a woman or another," and proudly show their blue marks and abrasions to their comrades, as if these were true wounds of warfare. However, the men never did injury to any woman that I could see. Footnote 3. Circumcision. Return to text. Page 162. Now this night, while all the warriors of Bulliwif slept, I was too afraid to drink or laugh. I feared the return of the Wendal. Yet they did not return, and I also eventually slept, but fitfully. Now in the following day there was no wind, and all the people of the kingdom of Hrothgar worked with dedication and fear. There was talk everywhere of the Khorgan and the certainty that it would attack upon the night. The claw-mark wounds on my face now pained me, for they pinched as they healed, and ached whenever I moved my mouth to eat or speak. Also it is true that my warrior's fever had left me. I was afraid once more, and I worked in silence alongside the women and old men. Toward the middle of the day I was visited by the old and toothless noble whom I had spoken to in the banquet hall. This old noble sought me out, and said thus in Latin, "I will have words with you." He led me to step a few paces apart from the workers at the defenses. Now he made a great show of examining my wounds, which in truth were not serious, and while he examined these cuts he said to me, "I have a warning for your company. There is unrest in the heart of Hrothgar." This he spoke in Latin. "What is the cause?" I said. "It is the herald, and also the son Wiglaf, who stands at the ear of the king," the old nobleman said. Page 163. "And also the friend of Wiglaf. Wiglaf speaks to Hrothgar that Bulliwif and his company plan to kill the king and rule the kingdom." "That is not the truth," I said, although I did not know this. In honest fact, I had thought upon this matter from time to time. Bulliwif was young and vital, and Hrothgar old and weak. And while it is true that the ways of the Northmen are strange, it is also true that all men are the same. "The herald and Wiglaf are envious of Bulliwif," the old noble spoke to me. "They poison the air in the ear of the king. All this I tell to you so that you may tell the others to be wary, for this is a matter fit for a basilisk." And then he pronounced my wounds to be minor and turned away. Then the noble came back once more. He said, "The friend of Wiglaf is Ragnar," and he went away a second time, and not looking back upon me further. In great consternation, I dug and worked at the defenses until I found myself near to Hergr. The mood of Hergr was still as grim as it had been upon the day previous. He greeted me with these words, "I do not want to hear the questions of a fool." Page 164. I said to him that I had no questions, and I reported to him what the old noble had spoken to me. Also, I told him it was a matter fit for a basilisk. Footnote 4. At my speech, Hergr frowned and swore oaths and stamped his foot and bid me accompany him to Bullywiff. Bullywiff directed work on the ditch at the other side of the encampment. Hergr drew him aside and spoke rapidly in the Norse tongue with gestures to my person. Bullywiff frowned and swore oaths and stamped his foot, much as Hergr, and then asked a question. Footnote 4. Ibn Fadlan does not describe a basilisk, apparently assuming that his readers are familiar with the mythological creature, which appears in the early beliefs of nearly all Western cultures. Also known as a cockatrice, the basilisk is generally a variety of cock with a serpent's tail and eight legs, and sometimes bearing scales instead of feathers. What is always true of the basilisk is that his stare is deadly, like the stare of a gorgon, and the venom of the basilisk is particularly lethal. According to some accounts, a person who stabs a basilisk will watch the venom travel up the sword and onto his hand. The man will then be obliged to cut off his own hand to save his body. It is probably this sense of the danger of the basilisk that prompts its mention here. The old noble is telling Ibn Fadlan that a direct confrontation with the troublemakers will not solve the problem. Interestingly, one way to dispatch a basilisk was to let it see its reflected image in a mirror. It would then be killed by its own stare. Return to text. Page 165. Hergr said to me, "Bullywiff asks, who is the friend of Wiglaf? Did the old man tell you who is the friend of Wiglaf?" I responded that he had, and the friend was of the name Ragnar. At this report, Hergr and Bullywiff spoke further among themselves and disputed briefly, and then Bullywiff turned away and left me with Hergr. "It is decided," Hergr said. "What is decided?" I inquired. "Keep your teeth together," Hergr said, which is a North expression meaning "do not talk." Thus I returned to my labors, understanding no more than I had at the beginning of the matter. Once again I thought these Northmen to be the most peculiar and contrary men on the face of the earth, for in no matter do they behave as one would expect sensible beings to behave. Yet I worked upon their silly fence and their shallow ditch, and I watched and waited. At the time of the afternoon prayer, I observed that Hergr had taken up a work position near to a strapping giant youth. Hergr and this youth toiled side by side in the ditch for some time, and it appeared to my way of seeing that Hergr took some pains to fling dirt into the face of the youth, who was in truth a head taller than Hergr and younger, too. Page 166. The youth protested, and Hergr apologized, but soon was flinging dirt again. Again Hergr apologized. Now the youth was angry, and his face was red. No more than a short time passed before Hergr was again flinging dirt, and the youth sputtered and spat it and was angry in the extreme. He shouted at Hergr, who later told me the words of their conversation, although the meaning was evident enough at the time. The youth spoke, "You dig as a dog." Hergr spoke in answer, "Do you call me a dog?" To this the youth said, "No, I said that you dig as a dog, flinging," footnote 5, "earth carelessly as an animal." Footnote 5. There is some Arabic script. In Arabic and in the Latin text, verbera, both words meaning flogging or whipping, and not flinging, as this passage is ordinarily translated. It is usually assumed that Ibn Fadlan used the metaphor of whipping with dirt to emphasize the ferocity of the insult, which is clear enough in any case. However, he may have consciously or unconsciously transmitted a distinctly Scandinavian attitude toward insults. Another Arab reporter, Al-Tartushi, visited the town of Hedebi in AD 950 and said this about the Scandinavians. They are most peculiar in the matter of punishment. They have only three penalties for wrongdoing. The first of these, and the most feared, is banishment from the tribe. The second is to be sold into slavery, and the third is death. Women who do wrong are sold as slaves. Men always prefer death. Flogging is unknown to the Northmen. This view is not precisely shared by Adam of Bremen, a German ecclesiastical historian who wrote in 1075, "If women have been found unchaste, they are sold off at once, but if men are found guilty of treason or any other crime, they prefer to be beheaded than flogged. No form of punishment other than the axe or slavery is known to them." The historian Sjogren places great importance on Adam's statement that men would prefer to be beheaded rather than flogged. This would seem to suggest that flogging was known among the Northmen, and he argues further that it was most likely a punishment for slaves. Slaves are property, and it is economically unwise to kill them for minor offenses. Surely whipping was an accepted form of punishment to a slave. Thus it may be that warriors viewed whipping as a degraded penalty because it was reserved for slaves. Sjogren also argues that all we know of Viking life points to a society founded upon the idea of shame, not guilt, as the negative behavioral pole. Vikings never felt guilt about anything, but they defended their honor fiercely and would avoid a shameful act at any cost. Passively submitting to the whip must have been adjudged shameful in the extreme and far worse than death itself. These speculations carry us back to Ibn Fadlan's manuscript and his choice of the words "whipping with dirt." Since the Arab is so fastidious, one might wonder whether his words reflect an Islamic attitude. In this regard, we should remember that while Ibn Fadlan's world was certainly divided into clean and dirty things and acts, soil itself was not necessarily dirty. On the contrary, tayammum, ablution with dust or sand, is carried out whenever ablution with water is not possible. Thus, Ibn Fadlan had no particular abhorrence of soil on one's person. He would have been much more upset if he were asked to drink from a gold cup, which was strictly forbidden. Return to text. Page 167. Herger said, "Do you then call me an animal?" The youth replied, "You mistake my words." Now Herger said, "Indeed, for your words are twisted and timid as a feeble old woman." "This old woman shall see you taste death," the youth said, and drew forth his sword. Then Herger drew his, for the youth was the same Ragnar, the friend of Wiglaf, and thus I saw manifested the intention of Buluwif in the matter. These Northmen are most sensitive and touchy about their honor. Among their company, duels occur as frequently as micturition, and a battle to the death is counted ordinary. Page 168. It may occur on the spot of the insult, or if it is to be formally conducted, the combatants meet at the joining place of three roads. It was thus that Ragnar challenged Herger to fight him. Now this is the Northmen custom. At the appointed time, the friends and kin of the duelers assemble at the place of battle and stretch a hide upon the ground. This they fix with four laurel poles. The battle must be fought upon the hide, each man keeping a foot or both on the skin all the while. In this fashion they remain close to one another. Page 169. The two combatants each arrive with one sword and three shields. If a man's three shields all break, he must fight on without protection, and the battle is to the death. Such were the rules chanted by the old crone, the angel of death, at the position of the stretched hide, with all the people of Buluwif and the people of the kingdom of Hrothgar gathered around. I was myself there, not so close to the front, and I marveled that these people should forget the threat of the Khorgan, which had so terrified them earlier. No one cared anything for aught but the duel. This was the manner of the duel between Ragnar and Herger. Herger struck the first blow since he had been challenged, and his sword rang mightily on the shield of Ragnar. I myself had fear for Hörgr, since this youth was so much larger and stronger than he, and indeed Ragnar's first blow smote Hörgr's shield from its hand grip, and Hörgr called for his second shield.